them, pleasantly inflame the reader's interest without wholly satisfying his curiosity, and we will hope that it may be found to be so in the present case. Our quotations are set in a vast number of tongues. This is done for the reason that very few foreign nations among whom the book will circulate can read in any language but their own, whereas we do not write for a particular class or sect or nation, but to take in the whole world. We do not object to criticism, and we do not expect that the critic will read the book before writing a notice of it. We do not even expect the reviewer of the book will say that he has not read it. No, we have no anticipations of anything unusual in this age of criticism. But if the Jupiter, who passes his opinion on the novel, ever happens to peruse it in some weary moment of his subsequent life, we hope that he will not be the victim of a remorse bitter but too late. One word more. This is what it pretends to be, a joint production in the conception of the story, the composition of the characters, and in its literal composition. There is scarcely a chapter that does not bear the marks of the two writers of the book. S.L.C. C.D.W. End of section 00. The Gilded Age, A Tale of Today by Mark Twain and Charles Dudley Warner. Chapter 1. June 18 blank. Squire Hawkins sat upon the pyramid of large blocks called the Stile in front of his house, contemplating the morning. The locality was Obedstown, East Tennessee. You would not know that Obedstown stood on the top of a mountain, for there was nothing about the landscape to indicate it, but it did, a mountain that stretched abroad over whole counties and rose very gradually. The district was called the Knobs of East Tennessee, and had a reputation like Nazareth as far as turning out any good thing was concerned. The squire's house was a double log cabin in a state of decay. Two or three gaunt hounds lay asleep about the threshold, and lifted their heads sadly whenever Mrs. Hawkins or the children stepped in and out over their bodies. Rubbish was scattered about the grassless yard. A bench stood near the door with a tin wash-basin on it and a pail of water and a gourd. A cat had begun to drink from the pail, but the exertion was overtaxing her energies, and she had stopped to rest. There was an ash-hopper by the fence and an iron pot for soft soap-boiling near it. This dwelling constituted 1/15 of Obedstown. The other 14 houses were scattered about among the tall pine-trees and among the cornfields, in such a way that a man might stand in the midst of the city and not know but that he was in the country if he only depended on his eyes for information. Squire Hawkins got his title from being postmaster of Obedstown, not that the title properly belonged to the office, but because in those regions the chief citizens always must have titles of some sort, and so the usual courtesy had been extended to Hawkins. The mail was monthly, and sometimes amounted to as much as 3 or 4 letters at a single delivery. Even a rush like this did not fill up the postmaster's whole month, though, and therefore he kept store in the intervals. The squire was contemplating the morning. It was balmy and tranquil. The vagrant breezes were laden with the odor of flowers. The murmur of bees was in the air. There was everywhere that suggestion of repose that summer woodlands bring to the senses, and the vague, pleasurable melancholy that such a time and such surroundings inspire. Presently the United States mail arrived on horseback. There was but one letter, and it was for the postmaster. The long-legged youth who carried the mail tarried an hour to talk, for there was no hurry, and in a little while the male population of the village had assembled to help. As a general thing, they were dressed in homespun jeans, blue or yellow. Here were no other varieties of it. All wore one suspender, and sometimes two, yarn ones, knitted at home. Some wore vests, but few wore coats. Such coats and vests as did appear, however, were rather picturesque than otherwise, for they were made of tolerably fanciful patterns of calico, a fashion which prevails thereto this day among those of the community who have tastes above the common level and are able to afford style. Every individual arrived with his hands in his pockets. A hand came out occasionally for a purpose, but it always went back again.